So hi and welcome to Parent Talk hashtag with Bev. So as you know, I'm a parent of West Indian origin and I have two children, teenagers, young adults, and we're based in London, UK. Not an expert, but just sharing thoughts and my experience in the hope that it will help someone somewhere. So, I am trying to find the words to talk about mental health challenges. And why am I talking about that today? So first of all, I'm going to set myself a time limit of just 15 minutes. Because why am I talking about mental well-being? Because in the Black community, we don't really talk about it. And if anybody suffers from it, a lot are people who are marginalised. And how do we expect to heal if you cannot talk about things that are painful to think about and talk about? You know, in my work as family support worker, I've been calling parents and just finding out how they've been getting on during this lockdown. And there's been so many different opportunities to be able to talk about stuff. And one of the things that I have found in talking to parents is, first of all, you know, that we are so like, oh, it's not about me, it's about my kid. Oh, they need the help, not me. And that's true, they do. But if I'm the root of the tree, I need the help too. And sometimes it's just about giving yourself the space to admit that the root of the tree needs a little bit of work. So why mental health? Well, because I can see that some of the families that I'm working with are not coping as well as they would like. I was speaking to one mother this week. Now her partner, well no, it's not even her partner, he's the father of her children, has had a mental health breakdown in the past. Because they're no longer together and they haven't been for a while. But when she was with him and he went through this, because he was the father of her children, you know, she really put a lot of effort into making sure that he got well. And his family sat back and allowed her to do that. When they split up and he was all right, everybody was okay, but he's since had a mental health episode again. But from my understanding, the family now are like, why isn't this mother doing what she did 15 years ago when they were together? And I'm like, which planet are you on that you would think that me done with this man, he's having a mental health challenge and we are no longer together, but I must take responsibility for looking after him and getting him back to health, mental well health. So because this mother hasn't done that, the rest of the family is tripping out on her, sort of saying, well, you know, you don't really love him, Rirti, and Hastad and Kolfat. And I'm like, why should she? Yes, for the benefit of the children, there's a lot of things we do as mothers, you know, to make this thing work. And, you know, if we love you, which I'm sure she did lots of stuff to support him. But 15 years later, when you're no longer with him, he's not a part of your life. He's a part of the children's life. Who say that you have to? Who said that you've got to do that? I have no idea. And so because he's not getting what he wants, and because the family's not getting what they want, suddenly when he's taken the children are coming back into the house and they're calling their mother all kind of names under the sun about this, that and the other. Well, that's just the mental health of that individual that's playing out in my house with my children, who really don't know any better because they're caught in the middle of this crap. But I think for me, when I was listening, when this mother said, you know, I've just got to be strong, I was like, we're always saying that. I've always said that. I nearly went mad trying to be strong. I'm just thinking, how much do I share? Because, you know, there's a level of sharing so that other people will get it. And there's a level of sharing that's exposing yourself. But the question is, if we don't have some real conversations about mental health, we're not going to heal. And all that's going to happen is that the same shackles that bind me are going to bind my kids. And I'm not really about that. I never take how much years to get pregnant, then to nearly die in childbirth, to then push out my children so that they can carry on the burdens of what I had, or what my mum had, or what my mum's had. I'm sorry. It's time to talk. It's time for us to start healing. So this little one podcast is not enough for us to have conversation about it, you know. So I've got some guests who have gone through their own challenges, who are going to help me talk about this. And my hope is that in this series of talking about mental well-being, that some parent somewhere, somebody, somewhere can find some support, can put some support in place, can reflect and have a real heart-to-heart conversation with themselves and their families about what they need in order to survive. Because COVID-19 put us all in lockdown. And as people keep saying, it's changed the way in which we relate to each other. It's changed the world as we know it. If you'd asked me 45 years ago whether or not I would be alive and present to witness a change such as what's happening, I would have probably said, nah. Because you see, what you think you're used to, what you're used to, but going back to this family, I think my ears pricked up when I asked this mother, how are you coping with all of this that's going on? And, you know, the normal response is, yeah, you've got to be strong, innit? But then they let me know that, you know, when they couldn't cope, they called the Samaritans. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Samaritans is a helpline for people who just really cannot cope with whatever they're going through for one reason or another. Some people, they call that line when they're contemplating suicide. So, you know, you've got to really feel low. You've got to really feel down in order to. And, you know, some of us, we don't even pick up a phone to make that call. Some of us will just grab a spliff, grab a bottle of alcohol or drink the whole thing. Some of us will numb our pain with sex. Just go out there and find something and grab hold of it and do what you have to do, and for the time being it's done. Or get yourself involved in some kind of drama relationship. But when do we really have the time? When to heal? When do we think that we're good enough? Or that we've coped the best that we can cope and we need some help? Who do we turn to? Because for me, you know, depression is a mental health. And me know enough people who are depressed, but they're not getting professional help because they're not saying nothing to nobody. I was in a meeting today and a young girl, we were talking in this meeting, we've come together because we're looking at the next steps for mental health, and we're looking at how we can best support the people that who are part of the organisations that we're involved with. How can we support those moving forward who are going to have and do have mental health issues? And this young school girl said, the reason why, so we started the meeting and we were like, you know, why is mental health important to us? And this young girl said, it's important to me because, you know, my friends and I, we don't have somewhere that we can talk about certain things. And one of my friends, especially around the GCSE exams and everything, and the whole mess of GCSE exams and A-level exam results for this year, it's a whole mess in the UK. And she said that her friends committed suicide. And that really triggered me, because mental health is everyone's health, and you can't just expect somebody just to deal with it for you, because we've all got a part to play in the mental health of someone else, especially even just the way we treat them, even the things we say to them. And for a young girl whose life is just starting to feel that there was no body around her that she could reach out to, so she took her own life. I'm a big woman. I got my children. And I recently completed this mental health first aid course. And what I realized while I was doing this course was that I have suffered from mental health challenges in the years that I've been alive. And for one reason or another, mainly because I think probably I'm a coward, I have contemplated suicide, but I've not followed it through. I think the first time that I contemplated suicide was when I was still at school. And I'd got into a fight with a girl who got injured pretty badly. and everybody in the school decided to send me to Coventry, but that's what we did back then. That means nobody talks to you. And out of those in the sixth form that I was part of, only two girls spoke to me, Sandra and Paulina. And my mother, she couldn't understand why me never kill the gyal. And then when it transpired that that nearly happened, there was no sympathy. There was no thinking about how I might feel about the fact that I could have injured this person to the point where they could have died. And I do remember wondering what it might be like if I took my life. But there was nobody to talk to about that. And I think my way of dealing with it back then was, at the time, I'd been going to church. And so that seemed the right place for me to be able to meet God and talk to God and be amongst a community of people that I felt understood that I was kind of broken or going through something quite difficult. And that prevented me from acting. But you see, when things don't look hopeful in your life, you do contemplate things. So for me, the second time that I contemplated, and I can't even tell you what was specifically wrong at this particular time. I just know I was working in East London, and you know, the church thing probably wasn't doing, I think probably I'd moved away from the church and I'd moved out of a relationship, and out of that relationship I then had to find somewhere else to live, and I was on my own and I was isolated, and the only thing that kept me going was the work that I had. And I remember, you know, I'm very jolly and happy-go-lucky, and you can't really tell because we are very good at masking the deep feelings that are going on and presenting a different face to everybody. So I don't think anybody kind of knew, but I had decided that I was going to withdraw. Yeah, so I think, yeah, I just got a new place and a new place to live, and I was just not in a good place, and I was contemplating just pulling the curtains and letting go. But for some reason, somebody was telling me about this woman in Surrey Docks, who did readings with crystals and other stuff like that. And I think at that point I was just like, I'll go anywhere and speak to somebody. But anyway, I went along, and she recorded the session, actually. I should really find that. And she basically told me that those on the other side were trying to say to me that the plan that you have, she said, I don't know what it relates to, but they're telling me about curtains and about you pulling the curtains and closing them, and they don't want you to do that. I was stunned. Because nobody knew what I was planning. And she, I think she, I remember her saying something about your life is going to be like the hills and valleys. And it's about how you deal with the, when you're in the valleys. Something like that. We're talking many years ago, but I do remember it. Because I was contemplating something and I was stopped because of that. Because I suddenly realised that somebody, my spirits, my ancestors are watching over me. And they don't want me to do that. So, the reality is that mental well-being is a conversation that we need to be having. Because of the mental health first aid training, I spoke to my children about, you know, the fact that depression is real and it's a national health problem. It's not mental mad cuckoo people's problem. It's all of our problems, because at some point we're going to feel depressed about something. We're going to be anxious about something. We're going to have anxiety around something. And believe it or not, people, those are two things that are mental health challenges. And right now, a friend of mine whose partner died. Oh, this sounds so bloody gloomy. Oof. But a friend of mine whose partner has died because of COVID-19. They already had underlying health issues. Not that that means anything when you lose somebody. And why am I telling you this? Because he was telling me that trying to go and see a doctor now is extremely difficult, because it's remote. You've got to justify why they should even see you. And he said even when they went, even when he did get a chance to go and see them, they basically stood so far away, social distancing, and looked at him and just said, oh yeah, you need this, that and the other. And that was the end of his consultation. So if now more than ever we might need our doctors, if now more than ever we might need to be referred for some talk therapy, and we can't even see our doctors, or it's more difficult, and we've got mental health challenges, that means that everything that we're doing seems like a major effort, and we've got more obstacles in our way, and we've got so much negative news around us about how people are dealing with the COVID-19 and what we're doing from what we're not doing and what we're supposed to do from what we're not supposed to do, and how the government doesn't have a plan. It never had a plan, but it's got a plan. And we've got all the uncertainties of being a parent. I've got uncertainties around being a parent and just trying to handle, you know, not just my own stuff, but, you know, to try and assure and reassure my children. And I'm in a space where I'm healthy and I'm happy and I'm able to have these conversations with my children, who are late teens, not 8, 9, 7, 6, 5 year olds. If we don't make the space to help prepare ourselves to reflect and begin to heal, then what? What legacy are we leaving for our kids? What legacy, what kind of future are we trying to create for ourselves? What kind of root tree are we trying to establish? Listen, don't get me wrong, I'm not contemplating suicide now, and I'm not making light of it either. What I'm saying is, those people you love, those people around you that you love, who will be the life and soul of the party, may just need you to draw alongside them to find out how they're really coping. And if somebody is depressed, it is about giving them the space to talk about it and to help them to understand that they're not on their own going through this. And that even if I don't understand how you're feeling, I want to understand, and I'm here with you to the best of my ability to encourage you, to listen to you, to encourage you to get professional help. And I'm still here even when you get the professional help. I am asking us to try and heal ourselves and to get the tools we need in order to do that so that we are around for a lot longer, that we have more fulfilled lives and relationships with the people that we love, I love my kids, but I'm not going to cripple them so that they can't be prepared to handle what life's going to throw at them. So as I say, we're going to start a series of conversations around mental well-being. We've got some prejudices. I've got some prejudices. I've got some stigmas around mental health. It hasn't been easy just to come up in here and talk about the fact of what I've been through. And what I'm telling you is just a tip of an iceberg. And I'm in a good place. Can you imagine what it's like for somebody who's not in a good place? And if you want to help somebody, help yourself to understand how you can help. So if that really means that you need to go on some sort of training or course, like the mental health first aid one, fine. If it means volunteering to listen on one of those phone lines to try and help somebody who really feels that they're at the end of their tether, fine. If it's to sit down and have a conversation with your family to say, I'm struggling, I feel a little depressed. And depression, you know, it can be, oh God, I feel depressed, I didn't get that dress. Nah, I'm not talking about that kind of depression. I'm talking about the kind of where the person's moping around for a long time, for weeks upon weeks, and you know that they're not really coping as well, but you just don't want to have that conversation with them. Have that conversation. How are you doing? Is there anything I can do to help? Can I give you the space to talk and not tell you what to do, but just listen and encourage you to get help from some people or somebody who can give you more than me? And even when I do that, I'm still going to be around you to encourage you and to praise you and to say you're needed. We would miss you if you're not here. I don't even know if I'm going to actually send this out, but I hope I'm brave enough to do that so that we can really have the conversations that can heal. Until then, thanks for listening. You remain blessed, you and your family. Until next time, I'm out.